The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. Hey everyone, I'm Sarah Edmondson.
Hi, I'm Anthony Ames, Sarah's husband, aka Nippy.
And we're here to talk about things that are just a little bit culty. We were in a cult and we woke up, and it was all captured in a docuseries called The Vow on HBO, also in my memoir, Scarred.
And then we made this podcast. I guess you could say we're technically a cult show now.
But not your typical cult show. We're not so much about the grisly details. We are about kicking the doors down on the shame and the secrets that make these culty things so destructive.
We're here to have frank conversations about how cool things can cross over into the cultiverse. How to spot trouble when you see it, and what happens when it comes to recovering from something culty, if that happens to you.
Each week, we'll call on experts, advocates, fellow survivors, and whistleblowers to help us unpack what's going on in the cultiverse.
We're here to share what we know on everything from red flags to resiliency, and to have a few laughs along the way, because sometimes you gotta laugh.
Thank God. Now, we have a lot to cover, so let's get this show rolling, shall we? A Little Bit Culty Season 2 drops new episodes every Monday on the Acast app or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And to learn more, visit us on Instagram or at alittlebitculty.com. Hey, everybody.
Hello, Sarah. What are we doing here?
Season 2. This is the beginning of our podcast.
Oh, right.
Is your coffee kicking in?
Season 2. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Welcome back, everybody. Season 2. We are so excited, and our apologies it took so long. We had a bit of a break. We had a summer break. We traveled the world. No, we went to the U.S. for a little bit.
We went south.
Went to Atlanta, Nashville, Raleigh, Saranby. A little community just outside of Atlanta.
Might be a little culty.
But I really like it. I really like Saranby. If you don't know what it is, Google it and check out this little beautiful community in the middle of a farmland.
Yeah, it's a little bit culty, maybe.
What's culty about it is that it's insular. You know, it's a private community. I don't think there's anything bad going on. I couldn't see anything bad.
No.
If anything, it was just a group of people who wanted to live a certain way and are living a certain way and with a certain respect for the land, but also having the benefits of city life with the yoga studio and a green juice bar. So, I mean, I was just like, this is my jam.
That's how they get you. Green juice bars.
I am a sucker for a good green juice.
Spirulina pops. What else?
What else did we do?
Sarah was in a Hallmark movie called Roadhouse 2.
Roadhouse Romance, not Roadhouse 2.
Still Roadhouse 2 to me.
We've been a working actor family. Nippy's doing The Good Doctor tomorrow.
Or I'm going to be a bad doctor. If you know
He's going
mean.
To be a very naughty doctor. And Troy is going to be in season 2 of The Babysitters Club.
Which drops in four days.
Yeah, it drops on October 11th. So it will already have dropped by the time that you listen to this.
Oh, that's right.
But things are like cooking right now in the cultiverse. There's so much going on. R. Kelly was convicted, and apparently the prosecution used a very similar approach and template to how the NXIVM case went down.
He was peeing on people, Sarah. I mean, that's going to get you in jail.
Do we have to go there in episode 1?
Sarah, our last season was talking about how you got branded in your pubic area.
Okay, but I'm just saying...
Do you understand that our bandwidth... we're not PG-13.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my point is that there's lots happening, and R. Kelly being convicted is a huge win for people who are fighting against this type of predatory behavior, which has for so many years gone unchecked. And I feel really good about that.
He was longer than Keith.
Yeah. He's been going for a long time.
Late 90s.
And way worse. But that's done now. And I think that both of those cases will continue to set precedent for legal process. And I feel really relieved for the victims of the R. Kelly case. What else is going on in the cultiverse?
Lulu Rich.
Yes, that is a hot topic right now and will be one of our very first guests this season. Roberta Blevins, one of the whistleblowers against the LuLaRoe MLM scam that sold leggings, which everyone's talking about right now. We're so excited for that conversation. Stay tuned. And she's also promised to send me some leggings, which I'm also very excited about.
They don't make leggings for men, do they, really?
I think they do. She's working on getting a special sizing for you.
All right.
Everyone's talking about Nine Perfect Strangers because that's super culty. We
that's already
finished
come
it
and
yet.
Gone a little bit, hasn't it?
Has it come and gone?
I don't know. Once they started, you know, giving Nicole Kidman shit for the wig that she stole from Lord of the Rings. That was actually one of the reviews.
The wig really threw me off.
It was so funny. You were talking about the wigs and then I read a review the next day, literally the next day about how the wigs look like they were stolen from the set of Lord of the Rings.
Listen, it's hard for me to watch something about this type of content without being super critical, but the wig really threw me off. And I tried to focus on the positive. Like one of the things that I'm really excited about just for Nicole Kidman is the sweet irony that she's playing this culty leader after everything she's been through with Tom Cruise and Scientology. So I think there's sort of like a karmic full circle thing for her.
Well, I didn't notice the wig until you pointed it out. So it's not really funny.
But we were noticing other things, like they're trying to show all the culty things that can happen in this type of setting. And
you mean
it's like
they bit off more than they could chew?
Yeah, it's like there's just something about the tone of it. Like it's shot really well and amazing actors, but like it's not really coming together. It's like, is it a thriller? Is it like there's some comedy aspects? Right. Like I don't really get the tone. I also don't know, are they trying to shine a light on these types of abuses, or are they just trying to make something current? I don't know. What's your take?
I haven't seen enough of it. I think we've only seen two episodes, right?
So we'll circle back.
Yeah. Okay. We can, or not.
We'll circle back on Nine Perfect
Strangers. White Lotus.
Loved White Lotus.
That was pretty
good.
White
Lotus is my favorite show on TV right now.
That was good.
And what's culty about it? What's the connection?
Oh.
Only that we want Molly Shannon to play Nancy Salzman
in
the scripted version of our story. Just putting it out there, universe. Putting it out there. And it has a cult following.
Okay.
People are obsessed with White Lotus.
The absurdity of the humor is just so funny.
And it's a smart show.
It's crazy.
The commentary that the White Lotus makes is, for me, blows Nine Perfect Strangers out of the water. And I like the tone. It's consistent. It's
out of the water?
Gripping.
Damn.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we have questions from listeners. You and I have some funny things we might want to get into a little bit. Set people up for season two.
Setting people up. So we've got Lula Rich talking to Moira Penza, lead prosecution against Keith Raniere. That's a very special interview, dear to my heart. Our very first interview is actually going to be with Amanda Montell, the author of Cultish. And Nippy, can you explain why that's such an important interview for us?
Well, for me, and I don't know if people are in the same place, the thing I'm most sensitive to now, you've heard it, how language is always messed with and how terms are being defined. And Amanda Montell, who went to NYU, has a degree in linguistics, wrote a book called Cultish, and it basically really hammers out all the ways that language is used to indoctrinate people and how it's subtle and how gaslighting is done through language. It's just real, like the definitive example of how language is used or abused to indoctrinate people. And it's the thing I'm most sensitive to. So I love it. I think that's how they start. I'm reluctant to say they, but when language is used to control conversations, thoughts, it informs your behavior eventually. So she does a really good job of laying that out.
And that's something that we talk about in almost every episode when we speak to survivors and whistleblowers and they're sharing their experiences. We look at the language that was used in their group or cult and how that was exploitative or abusive. And it really showed us specifically how, ironically, we were in a group where we, like in Nexium, we thought we were doing critical thinking because of the way we thought we weren't being told what to think and we were being taught how to think. And then we'd be having these like pseudo philosophical conversations.
Yeah, like we wrote one up.
Yeah, we wrote one up to show you if Nexium was still going right now and we were in a training right now in this time of the coronavirus, this is the kind of question set that Keith would have us do. And when I say question set, so you can picture it, we'd be in a training room or in apropos the dingy former Italian restaurant turned disgusting Nexium clubhouse with porta potties in the back, just so you can picture that. And we'd be sitting around in circles of like 5 to 7 people having these conversations led by a coach who would ask these questions. So we wrote a question set of what Keith would have us discuss right now. Go for it, Nippy.
Okay. So yeah, to put it in context, it would be something like, just to set you up, this is how language is messed with. but under the guise of critical thinking. All right. So the first question would be like, we're going to discuss COVID and its implications. Everyone would be in groups and be like, what is health? What are rights? What is freedom? Can you have rights without freedom? Can you have freedom without rights? What's the difference between a right and a privilege? How does health relate to your rights and privileges? What does it mean if someone has the right over your health? What does it mean if your right to health is now a privilege? Discuss 45 minutes.
So we'd have this conversation for 45 minutes and then we'd rotate and switch groups. We could go deeper.
Go deeper. Yeah. You would have interesting conversation just because you're in the room with people who are just exploring these questions, but you're not really doing anything. And then I think the debrief is what we would call it, is kind of where the word salad would come out.
Yeah, exactly.
And he works backwards from the answers. He worked backwards from what you want everyone to think.
Yeah. What we were really coming to terms with is that we thought that we were having these conversations where we're learning to think for ourselves, but really the question sets were designed to lead us to a conclusion that was based on whatever Keith wanted us to believe.
Right.
So that's how indoctrination can work. That was a question set, a little bonus. And before we get into our other bonus, which we'll save for the end of the episode, we have some questions from our beloved listeners who have been so supportive, by the way. We just can't thank you enough for being so supportive and being so patient. We're so excited because we now have a partnership with Acast. So Acast will be helping to support us go to the next level. And we have many, many exciting episodes lined up. But first,
all right, let's get to the questions. Nexium hot takes.
So since we finished season one, a number of sentencings have occurred. And many people have asked, how do we feel about the sentencing? Generally, we're happy. Yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Judge Garafas, I think he got
it right.
Well, Nancy, we don't know, right? Like, if she's contrite and all that stuff, sure. I think you can't give her less than Allison Mack.
A lot of people in the community thought that she should have more given how much destruction she caused and how abusive she was. But the thing is that she got held accountable for the actual crimes.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go to jail for being a bitch, unfortunately. And a lot of the things that she did was just mean. It's not necessarily
right.
illegal.
Right. That's a great point. That's a great point. And a lot of this thing too is, you know, the scales of justice and empathy. And I think the judge is there. He's in the courtroom. He sees it. And he understands that all of these sentencings past Keith are effect of one person. And he took the root cause of why all these lives were ruined out of the equation. And that doesn't necessarily mean they didn't do bad things, but I think he understands that. And his sentencings reflect that. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for those who don't know, Lauren is not serving time. It's time served and she'll be on probation. Nancy got 3 years, Allison, 3.5 years, Kathy Russell, the bookkeeper, most people don't know much about. She was also does not have to have any jail time.
I love that they call her the bookkeeper. Like she's just like, she's the bookkeeper.
she's an accountant. But she showed like tremendous remorse. She was very apologetic and she woke up. And that's the thing is that there's a strong difference in the time served for people who show remorse, are contrite, realize that they were following a con man and that Keith is a monster. And for the people who refuse to disavow him, I think that's probably why most people are still loyal to him, is because part of the indoctrination he set in place is that if you leave, if you don't stand by me or stand by this curriculum and the tech and the mission and all that, that means you are weak. And that means you're going against your word. And that is like the worst thing in the Nexium world. If you're fully in, it's like leaving is the equivalent of saying, you know, there is no God if you're religious. And that's the thing, is that they do believe that Keith is good, even though that they may agree that Keith did some bad things. They're like, but his intentions were good. They can't yet pull that one underlying assumption out of their belief system, which is that he is not good. He's a bad person. He's a sociopath. He's a narcissist. He doesn't care about people. And they can't see that yet because at this point, they're still protecting their self-image as people who are smart and protecting their image as people who are doing good things to help the world. Because if they really took in what they were involved with, they'd have to admit they did bad things too.
Yeah, they're just going on a journey of reconciling their delusion. That's hard.
It is hard.
And I think the worst thing to do is engage them. I think the thing that's going to get them out is love and empathy, hopefully from family members. It's not going to come from me because I'm not feeling that way towards any of those people right now. And I think they need to be left alone.
All right. Case closed?
Yeah, I closed it a while ago.
Okay.
I just think having intellectual debates around that stuff is just, for me, pointless. I'm not indulging the flat earthers. I don't have the energy.
Okay.
Which sentence do you agree with the least? Claire Bronfman.
You think she should have more?
Listen, she's still paying for his attorneys after the judge put her in jail. What is that saying? Not only is your assessment of me wrong, I'm going to thumb my nose at you and not even take in that the reason you added years to my sentence is because of my unwillingness to denounce someone who's doing terrible things, which the judge showed her. To me, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. Like, if people want to get on with their lives, I'm all for that. But if you can't make that pivot with a mountain of information around you, and then you thumb your nose at the thing and double down and think it's being noble, like, you haven't learned your lesson. If that's exactly going on, I don't know what we know. Like, you know, a lot of it's conjecture and a lot of it's kind of like, you know, but if that's true, then hey, to me, that's the one that just like, everything else I think is pretty fair. I mean, people want Nancy's head more and I go back and forth on that. But again, I don't know what her disposition is. So it's kind of hard to say. And I think the judge does.
I think ultimately that's what it keeps going back to for us. We trust the judge. He has a great understanding of all of the nuances of this case and where people are at emotionally with taking responsibility and so forth.
Which one do you agree with least?
Honestly, I'm fine with his assessments. I really am.
Yeah, I think you got it right too.
People have asked like, how are you doing? And do you agree? And what's it like? And I think ultimately for us overall, at least I'll speak for myself, it's just closure. It's not out in the wind anymore, you know?
Yeah.
When Lauren was sentenced just before that, she did write an apology letter. Dear Sarah, first, I'm truly sorry, and I hope you can find it in your heart to read this letter. There are not enough tears for how deeply sad, ashamed, and regretful I feel. I've wanted to reach out to you for so long, years, but there have been court-imposed restrictions that have prevented it. Through my counsel, I requested to see if I could reach out to you at various times over the last years, and it's not possible till now. Please understand the reason you haven't heard from me is not because I haven't wanted to connect with you, which was great to hear because, you know, when you don't have contact with anyone for 4 years, it's hard to know. It's hard to know where to start. I made horrible mistakes, and I completely betrayed our friendship. I can only imagine what you have felt because of me. Pain, fear, disbelief, confusion, fears of violation, embarrassment, betrayal, anger, and so much more. As hard as it might be to believe, I want to tell you that I always loved you and valued our friendship. That was real for me. I genuinely always wanted you to have the life you love. I wanted that for you, Nippy, Troy, your parents. I still love you and want that for you, and it pains me that, instead of that, I helped hurt and traumatize you and added years of fear and pain to your life. Her last sentence is, I hope in some way this brings you some peace. My sincerest wish is that someday you can forgive me. I assure you that I will continue to work hard and tirelessly to regain any semblance of trust. Please know you're in my ongoing thoughts. It's so weird because she's in my thoughts too and I can't communicate with her. It's really hard. But that sounds like a very apologetic, sincere letter to me. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And Nancy did not send you one, correct?
Nancy did not send. And that's the thing,
Interesting. That, to me, I think that speaks volumes about the entire situation. We both wrote her, called her, like tried to warn her.
Yeah, I called her. You wrote her that letter, which was so well written and on point in a way that we didn't even know how on point it was until you called out stuff that hadn't even happened yet. I wrote a letter also with a victim impact statement, which basically said, I don't know if she should go to jail or not because at that point I didn't have the full scope of everything that she did, but I did say she should definitely not be coaching people.
You know, one of the things I realized too, I didn't realize how many people didn't like her.
Yeah.
After all this.
And also a lot of people still do. There's a lot of people that have gone to the point of, well, she didn't do anything to me kind of thing, which I think is really lame because a lot of people do bad things out there that didn't do anything to you. You should
not
still probably stay away
not
from.
Not my fight. Not my fight.
Yeah. 6722 says many women who were close to Keith ended up with cancer and some of them passed away. Is it something that has been brought up at the trial? We don't hear much about this. And I'm guessing it might've been difficult to prove even though he was in charge of their treatment. Yeah. So he was definitely involved in at least Pam and Barb's treatment. As far as I know, I don't know how much of Nancy. Nancy also had cancer at a certain point when we were there.
Two or three other people.
Basically we counted at one point 10 women around him who had various forms of cancer and two, Pam and Barb, who passed away.
What's her name? Suzanne from Texas died of it. I don't believe in accidents.
No, I thought there was something in the water, right? And then at this point, it would not surprise me if there was something nefarious going on. We have shared that sociopaths love to talk about what they're doing in plain sight. So
hide
you never
in plain sight. Yeah.
Hide in plain sight. So this friend of ours said, why are all these women around you getting sick? And he said, I think they're being poisoned. and it wouldn't be that hard to get poison into their water supply. So that's what a friend of mine told me who was very close to him.
There are two things about this entire thing that really, if we're going to chap ass, I'm going to chap ass right now.
Chap it.
There's those investigations around the women around them that got sick that to me are serious red flags that didn't get looked at enough. And then how Keith was protected in the Northern District in Saratoga. Those are two things I still think need to be investigated and still would love to see them investigated so that you can understand how someone is able to garner local authorities or garner local support and then maintain an atmosphere of abuse. And then that abuse would entail maybe even having people killed, right? So if that's true, those are certainly things that need to be removed from our culture. That's being diplomatic. But those two things to me are the things that really feel like had those things been investigated in real time, a lot of pain would have been avoided. That's just my two cents.
Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Did anyone learn a language in high school and then let it go and then have regrets about that later? If you're anything like me, then maybe you'll relate. I did French all the way up into 12th grade and then I let it go. I mean, I lived in Montreal for a few years and, you know, practiced a bit, but it just slipped away. And then I found Babbel. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. And thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy little bite-sized language lessons, I've been able to get back my French. I've actually found learning French to be fun again. And c'est vrai, je parle français. With Babbel, you only need 10 minutes to complete a lesson, so you can start having real-life conversations in a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 150 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, not computers. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Formidable. That means wonderful in French. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Clearly still working on that. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of three. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code CULTY. That's BABBEL.com, code CULTY. Agreed. Can I do my ass chapping since we're on it?
Yeah, sure. Chap away.
So we had this memory. They pulled us into Nancy's house for an emergency meeting. We were in some other training, so all the upper ranks were in town. So Nancy had this like room when they built her house that was like off the kitchen. It was actually great. Like it was a really nice house. And there was this sort of like, you've seen a lot of footage in it from The Vow where people are kind of sitting around and it looks like couches. That's in her living room. And it was designed so that Keith could come and speak to people and have meetings and brainstorming or training sessions in her home. And I remember sitting there and I think it was Jack and Loretta who came in to tell us that basically, you know, I mean, we all knew that there was a PR problem with the company. And basically they were proposing to us that...
Sorry to interrupt. Just to give an example of the PR problem. In hindsight, I'm glad we had it because I'm glad people did this. But we would have people enrolled application in and they'd Google Keith and then ghost us or go, what about this? And they wouldn't do it. Now, at the time, it was frustrating because we thought it wasn't true. We felt like the internet and people were slandering Keith and it was hurting, you know, growth and all that stuff. But thank God it was there and those people listened to the online. But that's the gist of what we dealt with a lot.
Yeah. Like for me is, you know, embarrassingly, I say this, but being one of the top salespeople, I would bring somebody in and they'd sit down, they'd be excited and they're like good to go. And then, yeah, they'd go online and they'd freak out, rightfully so. And I felt so thwarted by the, you know, the internet and the bad press. And, but even still, when Jack and Lola came and basically they had a proposal, they found a PR team to help us turn it all around. And they basically were asking for all of the leaders, everyone who was making money in the company, to pay at a minimum $5K each to pay this PR team to fix the image of Nexium Online.
And that's
the audacity, first of all.
Also, when you're guilty of the things that are actually being said about you online, you go ask the people that you're abusing to pay to fix a campaign to vindicate you.
Yeah. Truthfully, like I didn't do it. I don't think you did either, Nip. Or did you pay $5K?
No.
Yeah. No, but like other people did.
To do that, so.
Yeah. Other people did. I mean, I stalled because I didn't know how much of a ridiculous ass-chapping that would be because of what was going on. I just thought, they're never going to be able to fix it. Like, this is just money going into a sinkhole. And I knew that, and I didn't trust Jack or Lola to actually make it happen. I'm like, I'm not going to give you money for something they're not going to be able to do.
Well, and the company was like that. That's kind of what we knew.
It was more like people would have these ideas and be like super excited about it and then nothing would happen. Like there was this other project called the Ethical Business Coalition, which I thought was a great idea.
Oh my God.
12 years that I was at Nexium, this project was underway and it never...
It was 15 years.
15 years in the making.
No, it got to the point where they brought it up and we'd all roll our eyes.
Like, roll our eyes. But like, let me tell you the concept because it's a great concept. Like, assuming what we were doing was true, that we were building this.
All these things were jerk off concepts, Sarah. They're all great concepts.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's easy to come up with a good concept.
Let me tell them what the concept was.
Yeah,
it was basically like a phone book or like a resource for every person in Nexium and the business that they did, whether it was a, you know, they were a hairdresser or they were a carpenter or they were a personal trainer. And so that if you wanted to support somebody in Nexium and have your money go to somebody who was in the curriculum, which was part of the mission statement, keep the money within the hands of ethical people. So that, I mean, I kind of did it in my own way anyway. There was a time where every single person that I did business with, my hairdresser.
Cedric cut everyone's hair.
And also here in Vancouver, Diana had my local hairdresser who was also a member. And, you know, my real estate agent and my interior designer and the person, like my personal trainer, everyone was a Nexium. And I felt good about my money going to people within the community. And so the Ethical Business Coalition was going to be this thing that you could go to, like a big resource.
It's like YEO. You know what YEO is?
Yeah. And that's a good concept. But anyway, the fact that this success program can't make a fucking phone book of everyone in the community.
It's a Rolodex, people.
It's a Rolodex. It's a simple Rolodex. You enter the information, then you should be able to press on a button and find someone. Jesus. Be like, oh, I wonder who's a gardener or landscape artist in New York City. They should be able to find that. Anyway, it never got made. So my point is that I didn't trust them they'd actually be able to do anything. And also was pouring all the money that I was making back into the center. But the audacity for them to ask us for this chaps my ass.
Have you been watching the updates from the Dossier Project? Thoughts? You know, not really.
Not worth my time.
It's just kind of like hearing people divide the word of truth and then hammer in on a content point that's out of context and then blur by omission, lie by omission. It's just not interesting.
There's a lot of ethical lying going on in there.
Yeah. Then there's like, there'll be like a tweet like, bullying is an activism. Motherfucker, you have photos of a brand on my wife's crotch and like 30 to 40 other people. And you're telling me bullying is an activism. Like just the lack of awareness on all their rhetoric to me, it's gotten boring.
Also the trial's over.
Yeah.
They're trying to have a trial.
Yeah.
On social media.
It's going post-game interview. Everything's over.
It was a blowout.
We have more questions?
Yes. One listener asks, so excited for the next season. I've always wondered how you plan to explain your Nexium involvement to your children and what tools, knowledge are you maybe giving them so they don't fall into the same trap?
Mom and dad were badasses.
One day I hope to give them my book when they're old enough to read it. Troy knows a little bit, perhaps a bit too much. And we tried to keep it from him, but he knows that there's a guy named Keith who did bad things. And mommy and daddy went to the police and now he's in jail. that's the basics of what he knows.
You know, what's interesting, Sarah, to that is there's certain things that, like, I think he understands how we got conned a little bit. And then he's watching advertisements. He's like, Dad, they're just trying to get you to buy things. So I think he's kind of thinking a little bit meta.
Yeah.
As a result. I don't want to scare him.
No, I think we'll show him what red flags look like and give him a really solid foundation for being able to actually think critically and to, you know, have a strong sense of self and knowing how to look for things externally when you don't know how to deal with something without putting all of your eggs in one basket and choosing a guru who's going to tell you how to do everything, which is also what religion provides for some people, you know? So I think giving him a wide range of experiences and teaching him how different things work. And also maybe, you know, maybe one day even listening to this podcast, which is our goal for many people to, so they don't fall into the same trap, so that they know what the red flags look like, et cetera. They can walk into the sales pitch and say no thank you immediately versus taking some classes or just, you know, putting their foot in just to see and what's the worst that could happen. We hope that people don't get that far. They don't even get to the sales pitch. They can smell the red flags already.
Okay. Are there any self-help groups that you still respect and would recommend to people? Or has this experience completely turned you off to the entire industry?
I'm pretty turned off.
Yeah.
That might change.
It's a good question. Here's my thing. It's kind of make good friends.
Surround yourself with good people.
Yeah.
Have a good therapist. Find a community that's not trying to extract something from you. Like, I think community is important and people want that. As soon as it becomes a self-help group, it's so ripe for potential abuse, especially if there's a leader. Even if the leader doesn't want to be abusive, if that person gets a lot of power, mm-hmm. you know, and this is something we discuss a lot in the upcoming season. When does it go from good to bad? And not everyone sets out to destroy people like Keith did. Some people legitimately want to help people, but, you know, they can get too much power and that can be problematic. And then they can take a turn, which is different than being a sociopathic narcissist with a plan for destruction.
After leaving and unpacking everything, did you start to question whether everything was a cult? Like any participation in something might be dangerous if you weren't too careful? Yeah, that's kind of what I think this podcast does. And it's getting people to be sensitive to how these things begin. I know I'm sensitive in certain areas that Sarah's not sensitive to and vice versa. But I see a lot of it right now. The thing I'm most sensitive to is these dressed up altruistic movements that are actually proving to be more divisive. They come in the package of NPR voice. They say things like this, and it's really sad.
Well, there's a bait and switch, right?
Yeah, they use words like breathtaking. It's like compassion gone mad kind of things that I'm super sensitive to because I just don't think the force behind it is as altruistic as they've dressed themselves up to be. So those are the things that I see right now kind of being divisive and having culty aspects to that I'm interested in having conversations around. And there's a lot of pushback to those conversations in a lot of ways through political correctness that to me are the red flags. And that means the conversations need to be had and people need to step up and start having them because right now is the easiest time to have these conversations. It's only going to get more difficult. So that's one of the reasons behind the podcast.
I think it's funny too, because in season one, we got shit for both being Trump supporters and being too leftist. So nobody knows.
I don't give a shit about taking shit. If I know that I'm coming from a place of this is divisive language, it may offend you and it may not align with your propaganda, but you know, it's still, I think, in the spirit of questioning, right?
This is not a political podcast. This is a podcast about abuses of power and understanding the processes used. And we've both seen both sides of left, right, whatever you believe, being super shitty and culty with the other side.
Well, the culty part is putting us into categories. Yeah, that's the culty part. Needing to categorize us and put us in allegiance with one binary world is the culty process that we're calling out.
And we want to be really clear on that because we've seen it in our friend group. We've seen it on the internet. We've seen it in response to this podcast. It's problematic and it is worse now than it was 4 years ago when we got out because of what's happening in the world. And again, we are not stating our personal politics. We're looking at the process with both sides and it's very culty.
Well, it also doesn't mean that I can agree with content points from one side, right? Mm-hmm. But normally the force behind it is the one that's divisive. And making those distinctions is important so people can go, I can agree with this, but I can also agree with something on this side. And it doesn't mean I'm a Trumper, or I'm what's the word? Libtard? Is that the one they use? Or illiberal, or yeah, something like that? Just because I happen to agree with things on the side, and things have become binary, and that's culty.
And specifically making the other side bad and having labels for the other side that we actually talk about this in our next episode with Amanda Montell, a thought-stopping cliche.
Yeah, those are interesting.
So Eric from Preacher Boys, who we're hoping to have as a guest on one day, says, where do you draw the line between religion and cult? I've heard Stephen Hassan talk about this, but I'm curious to hear you two discuss. I kind of want to save that for our episode with John DeLynn, former Mormon, because he really goes into what the nuances of that are.
Yeah.
He nails it. But I know Stephen says that if you leave a religion and people still talk to you, it all depends on what happens when you leave is the main thing.
I think that's a pretty big distinction. Yeah.
Apparently, a lot of people stay in their groups, Mormon, Jehovah's Witness, even Nexium, because they don't want to lose their friends. And they know that if they leave, they don't have anybody. And some people don't have friends outside of, or a community or family even outside of that group. So they stay.
What feelings did you have when the light first went on? How did you come to terms with saying these five little words? I was in a cult.
I mean, all sorts of feelings. At the beginning, it was a massive amount of just feeling so betrayed that friends of ours lied to our face about who Keith really was and what was really going on. And also like the shame, right? Because people had said, oh, that seems that you might be in a cult, or that looks like a cult, or a little bit culty. Well, just to know that they were right. Like I walked around for a long time going, you were right. I was in a cult. And that's like embarrassing, but also it was sort of freeing because it kind of explained so much of the things that never added up over the years that we shelved that we couldn't wrap our heads around, right?
We were living a life with shackles on, but we couldn't necessarily see the shackles, but we could feel them, if that makes sense. Initially, there's all those emotions, shame and whatever thing. But for me, it was an interesting thing because, you know, in the horror movie, when the person finds out the person they're talking to is the guilty one. And there's that scene they always have where, does he know I know that he's the murderer or the whatever? I had the awareness that what we were looking at in Keith, and then I had to go back up and hang out with like people that were still under the con, knowing that the con was going on, if that makes sense. So I knew what I was looking at while other people didn't know what they were looking at yet. Mm-hmm. And I had those kind of like heart palpitation moments of like, oh my God, it's all there. And you can see it all. And you can see how other people don't see it.
Because they're operating on a different assumption.
Different assumption. And then when I started to see the sadistic aspect of it, like all these people around in these breakout groups thinking that they're doing something like changing the world. And I know they're jerking off at that point. Like I know it's not real. That was when I went up to talk to Nancy and Lauren before I went in and did my
mic drop
official complaint. But there was that moment of looking at what I thought was always good and then seeing it for what it really was really, fuck, man. I mean, never thought I'd be there to live that and have that experience was quite an experience. I don't know what else to say.
It was so traumatic that like, I feel like I could kind of handle anything right now, knowing that like you can go through the trauma and betrayal like that. And there's light at the end of the tunnel and you will be okay.
Everyone is going to have to go through some sort of trauma in life. It's unavoidable.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great segue to Sharby's question. Any advice for reclaiming relaxing time? Nippy's still trying to get me to relax.
Yeah, I got this massager over here.
Honestly, my main thing to relax is I have a hot bath every night before bed with like a hot turmeric drink.
And a hot husband.
Hot, hunky husband.
See what I did there?
You know, walks in the woods, but like I really have a hard time relaxing and there's always something to do. So Nippy's like, chill, babe. Come sit.
I don't have that problem.
Chill and Netflix with me.
I don't really have the problem.
Nippy doesn't have that problem. It really bugs me. I'm like, well, why are you relaxing right now? We have things to do.
Yeah, no, I'm going to get to it when I get to it.
I'll take tips for relaxing.
Well, you know, to answer that question, we were lucky because we have family that we could lean on. We have our own family. While it's work and effort is also therapy because you're giving love to kids and you're experiencing it back and it's instant like family camaraderie. Those things are all kind of things that we had that I think a lot of people going through the trauma did not have in the way that we had. So we had a lot of light show up into our lives in every aspect, personal, professional, with our team that's helping us get this podcast off the ground, with our producers, with everyone that's reached out. So we've been really blessed and fortunate to have all that. And that's been soothing because it's been also reassuring after going through something that could make you more jaded, seeing the flip side of it and being able to turn a negative into a positive. I think, is the story that we're going to tell. And then to go on and hopefully spread that to other people through what we're doing, we're scaling it. We're scaling our joy, if you can do that. We're 10 timing it.
Well, we have it together. And I think a lot of people didn't. A lot of people got out of this very much alone and with nothing. And we have each other. And I don't think I don't know where I'd be without you, Nip, because you've had my back and you've been there for us as a father and a partner. You know, that is truly the best silver lining for all this.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Actually, Lauren Carmel asked, hope this isn't too personal, but would you ever get married again, like a different ceremony outside the cult? And we actually did that.
Did
I was pregnant with Ace. We did it. We redid our vows because a certain Voldemort wrote the first round of vows. And so we did a ceremony with our own vows on Hornby Island at Seabreeze Lodge, or one of my happy places in the world. We go every summer. We redid our ceremony.
Alchemy Reverie says, would you ever want to be a motivational coach using any of the betterment tools from ESP to make something that is entirely your own? I realize a lot has been tarnished, but what you made in Vancouver was a wonderful community before DOS came along. It would be great for you to create something that is beautiful and individual to ESP. Love from Ireland.
Thank you. Thank you, Alchemy.
Thank you. That was nice of you. Not for me.
Yeah, I don't want to go that route. I would maybe become like a psychotherapist or a family counselor or something with a tool set that already exists, like find a modality that's already been made. I don't want to create anything myself because I feel like I might draw from something inadvertently that might be toxic. And I don't know, like just the whole, again, it has been tarnished, but I think what is important to me is to create community as long as it's healthy. That's part of what, for me being, you know, part of the I Got Out community, for people to tell their stories, that feels very healthy, not culty.
Yeah. And I think the universe is going to open up other opportunities for what we're doing and already has. So if it's not necessarily quote motivational coach, it'll be something kind of, or our story has been turned into content and wisdom for others. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Actually, perfect segue. We, you know, being a part of communities that are doing this already. One of our future guests, Dr. John DeLynn, invited us to come be on his podcast called Mormon Stories. And he has an event down in Utah called Thrive Day on November 14th in the Salt Palace in downtown Salt Lake City. And he's basically created a full day dedicated to healing and growth after leaving Mormonism or other high demand religions. So we're going to be there. I'm going to be one of the speakers. Nippy and I will be doing his podcast. So Thrive Day is a full day of speakers. The full lineup and registration information, all the details is at thrivebeyondreligion.com. So we'll be there. I'll be signing books. And really hoping that some of you can, by the time this airs, you'll have a month to make your travel plans. If you want to come hear me speak or to meet us, we would love to meet some of you. And again, healthy community, helping people learn and grow. Sure. But I don't think I'm going to be creating anything myself personally.
Okay.
We've had such a great response from what Nippy came up with, chaps our asses. About.
It's actually Dumb and Dumber.
Okay. Oh, yes.
It's from the movie Dumb and Dumber. Right. I'm not going to, you know, it's Jim Carrey, Jeff Daniels right there.
Well, you brought it to my life. You brought chaps my ass to my life. Yeah. But a term that we learned in our cult recovery education for something that happened to us is that there was a lot of word salad. And I think we've mentioned this in season one. But one of the things you don't get to see, because you're not here all the time when we're not recording, is Nippy is so good at impersonating Keith. And I'll throw him a topic and he'll word salad it. A la Keith. And it's so perfect because it's so cringy because there were so many times that Keith would go off on a topic and pontificate and wax poetic. And we'd be sitting there and some of the concepts made sense. And then it would kind of lose a grip in reality. And everyone would be smiling and nodding. We realize now that nobody understood, but we would be trying to understand. If we didn't understand, we thought something was wrong with us. So that's the nature of word salad.
Yeah. And making meaning out of it. Well, there's that clip of me where I do an imitation of Keith at a birthday party in front of him.
Yeah. So we're going to get it.
We're going to post that, but it's basically me doing a whole imitation in front of him.
Now I think that's where Keith decided he was going to get Nippy back and take his wife.
You know, who's in jail? Who's in jail right now? Me or him?
120.
Okay. So I'm going to define word salad. So word salad or schizophasia is a confused or unintelligible mixture of seemingly random words and phrases. This is off Wikipedia. Most often used to describe a symptom of a neurological or mental disorder. The term schizophasia is used in particular to describe the confused language that may be evident in schizophrenia. The words may or may not be grammatically correct, but are semantically confused to the point that listener cannot extract any meaning from them. The term is often used in psychiatry as well as in theoretical linguistics to describe a type of grammatical acceptability judgment by native speakers, and in computer programming to describe textual randomization. So I can remember a specific one where I was just like, fuck this noise, because it was so confusing. But everyone was like, kind of enamored with it, confused, and like trying to understand it. And it was, I think, part of the acting curriculum where it was, understand, you have your behaviors, the act of doing the behavior, and then there's the act of not doing the behavior. And then there is the act of observing yourself do the behavior and the act of observing yourself not do the behavior. And then there's what's called the Zen tendency, the tendency to sit in yourself, observe yourself doing the behavior while not doing the behavior, observing the behavior. And then I was just like, where the fuck, what is this doing? And he's like, so as an actor, you're going to be the Zen tendency. And someone would be like, oh, the Zen tendency, it's like, I'm watching myself do the behavior. No, it's the act of watching yourself watch the behavior. Everyone was in these classes going, what in the fuck is going on here?
But it was something that would be thrown around too. Like after that, they'd be like, so
what are we doing
all day?
We're sitting around thinking about these things that aren't even really real concepts, but because he's just deemed them into reality.
So there's going to be a word salad segment, and you'll know the word salad segment because it sounds like this.
Come and get some of my nippy sauce.
No,
I'm just kidding.
No. The fuck you talking about? So season two.
Lots of word salad, lots of ass chapping, incredible guests.
And thank you all to making this happen. The listeners have been really kind of our feedback and pulse and what we want to produce. And here we are, season two on demand. So thanks everyone for making it happen. And thanks to the team. Special thanks to Will and Karis and our associate producer, Jess Tardy, who's never tardy.
For the party.
Okay.
See you next week.
Bye-bye. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean. Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. It takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.